The next witness was the driver of the truck containing the contraband. He was an ex-Zipra guerrilla, recently released from one of the rehabilitation centres, and his testimony was given in the vernacular and translated into English by the court interpreter. "Had you ever met the accused before the night you were arrested?" Abel Corrie demanded of him, after establishing his identity. "Yes, I was with him in the fighting." "Did you see him again after the war?" "Yes." "Will you tell the court when that was?" "Last year in the dry season." "Before you were placed in the rehabilitation center?" "Yes, before that."
"Where did you meet Minister Tungata Zabiwe?"
"In the valley near the great river."
"Will you tell the court about that meeting?"
"We were hunting elephant for the ivory."
"How did you hunt them?"
"We used tribesmen, Batonka tribesmen, and a helicopter to drive them into the old minefield."
"I object to this line of questioning, my lord," Mr. Patel QC jumped up. "This has nothing to do with the charges."
"It has reference to the first charge," Abel Corrie insisted.
"Your objection is overruled, Mr. Patel. Please continue, Mr. Prosecutor."
"How many elephant did you kill?"
"Many, many elephant."
"Can you estimate how many?"
"Perhaps, 200 elephant, I am not sure."
"And you state that Minister Tungata Zabiwe was there?"
"He came after the elephant had been killed. He came to count the ivory and take it away in his helicopter."
"What helicopter?"
"A government helicopter."
"I object, Your Lordship. The point is irrelevant."
"Objection overruled, Mr. Petal. Please continue."
When his turn came for cross-examination, Mr. Joseph Petal went into the attack immediately. "I put it to you that you were never a member of Minister Tungata Zabiwe's resistance fighters, that you never, in fact, met the minister until that night on the Karoi Road."
"I object, Your Lordship," Abel Corrie shouted indignantly. "The defence is trying to discredit the witness in the knowledge that no records of patriotic soldiers exist, and that the witness cannot therefore prove his gallant service to the cause."
"Objection sustained. Mr. Petal, please confine your questions to the matter in hand and do not bully the witness."
"Very well, Your Lordship."
Mr. Petal was rosy-faced with frustration as he turned back to the witness.
"Can you tell the judge when you were released from the rehabilitation centre?"
"I forget. I cannot remember."
"Was it a long time or a short time before your arrest?"
"A short time,"
the witness replied sulkily, looking down at his hands in his lap.
"Were you not released from the prison camp on the condition that you drove the truck that night and that you agreed to give evidence?"
"My lord!"
shrieked Abel Corrie, and the judge's voice was as shrill and indignant.
"Mr. Patel, you will not refer to state rehabilitation centres as prison camps."
"As your lordship pleases," Mr. Patel continued. "Were you made any promises when you were released from the rehabilitation centre?"
"No."
The witness looked about him unhappily. "Were you visited in the centre 2 days before your release by a Captain Timon Bebe of the 3rd Brigade?"
"No."
"Did you have any visitors in the camp?"
"No, no."
"No visitors at all, are you sure?"
"The witness has already answered that question."
The judge stopped him, and Mr. Petal sighed theatrically and threw up his hands.
"No further questions, my lord." "Do you intend calling any further witnesses, Mr. Corot?"
Craig knew that the next witness should have been Timon Mbebe, but unaccountably Abel Corrie passed over him and called instead the trooper who had been knocked down by the Land Rover. Craig felt an uneasy little chill of doubt at the change in the prosecution's tactics. Did the prosecutor want to protect Captain Mbebe from cross-examination? Did he want to prevent Mr. Petal from pursuing the question of a visit by Timon Mbebe to the rehabilitation centre? If this was so, the implications were unthinkable. So Craig forced himself to put his doubts aside. The necessity for all questions and replies to be translated made the entire court process long drawn out and tedious. So it was only on the third day that Craig was called to the witness stand. After he had taken the oath and before Abel Corrie had begun his examination, he glanced towards the dock. Tungata Zabiwe was watching him intently, and as their eyes locked, Tungata made a sign with his right hand. In the old days, when they had worked together as rangers in the game department, Craig and Tungata had developed this sign language to a high degree. During the dangerous work of closing in on a breeding herd to begin the bloody elephant culls, during which it had been their duty to destroy surplus animals that were overpopulating the reserves, or when they were stalking a marauding, cattle-killing pride of lions, they had communicated silently and swiftly with this private language. Now Tungata gave him the clenched fist, his powerful black fingers closing over the clear pink of his palm, in the sign that said, "Beware, extreme danger." The last time Tungata had given him that sign, he had had only microseconds to turn and meet the charge of the enraged, lung-wounded lioness as she came grunting in bloody pink explosive gasps of breath out of heavy brush cover, launching herself like a golden thunderbolt upon him, so that even though the bullet from his .458 Magnum had smashed through her heart, her momentum had hurled Craig off his feet. Now Tungata's sign made his nerves tingle and the hair on his forearms rise, at the memory of danger past and the promise of danger present. Was it a threat or a warning, Craig wondered, staring at Tungata? He could not be certain, for Tungata was now expressionless and unmoving. Craig gave him the signal. "Query, I do not understand." But Tungata ignored it, and Craig abruptly realized that he had missed Abel Corey's opening question. "I'm sorry, will you repeat that?" Swiftly, Abel Corey led him through his questions. "Did you see the driver of the truck make any signal as the Mercedes approached?" "Yes, he flashed his lights." "And what was the response?" "The Mercedes stopped and two of the occupants left the vehicle and went to speak with the driver of the truck." "In your opinion, was this a prearranged meeting?"
"Objection, your lordship. The witness cannot know that."
"Sustained. The witness will disregard the question."
"We come now to your gallant rescue of Miss J from the evil clutches of the accused."
"Objection. The word evil."
"You will discontinue the use of the adjective evil."
"As your lordship pleases."
After that hand signal, and during the rest of Craig's testimony, Tungata Zabiwe sat immovable as a figure carved in the granite of Matabili land, with his chin sunk in his chest, but his eyes never left Craig's face. As Mr. Petal rose to cross-examine, he moved for the first time, leaning forward to rumble a few terse words. Mr. Petal seemed to protest, but Tungata made a commanding gesture.
"No questions, your lordship," Mr. Petal acquiesced, and sank back in his seat, freeing Craig to leave the witness box without harassment.
Sally Ann was the last of the prosecution witnesses, and after Peter Fungabera, perhaps the most telling. She was still limping with her sprained ankle, so that Abel Corry hurried forward to help her into the witness box. The dark shadow of the bruise on her neck was the only blemish on her skin, and she gave her evidence without hesitation in a clear, pleasing voice.
"When the accused seized you, what were your feelings?"
"I was in fear of my life."
"You say the accused struck you. Where did the blow land?"
"Here, on my neck. You can see the bruise."
"You state that the accused aimed the stolen rifle at Mr. Mello. What was your reaction? And will you tell the court whether you sustained any other injuries?"
Abel Corry made the most of such a lovely witness, and very wisely Mr. Patel once again declined to cross-examine. The prosecution closed its case on the evening of the third day, leaving Craig troubled and depressed. He and Sally Ann ate at her favourite steakhouse, and even a bottle of good Cape wine did not cheer him. That business about the driver never having met Tungata before, and being released only on a promise to drive the truck. "Oh, you didn't believe that?" Sally Ann scoffed. "Even the judge made no secret of how far-fetched he thought that was." After he dropped her at her apartment, Craig walked alone through the deserted streets, feeling lonely and betrayed, though he could not find a logical reason for his feelings. Mr. Joseph Petal, QC, opened his defence by calling Tungata Zabiwe's chauffeur. He was a heavily built Matabili, although young, already running to fat, with a round face that should have been jovial and smiling, but was now troubled and clouded. His head had been freshly shaved, and he never looked at Tongata once during his time on the witness stand. "On the night of your arrest, what orders did Minister Zabiwe give you?"
"Nothing. He told me nothing."
Mr. Patel looked genuinely puzzled and consulted his notes. "Did he not tell you where to drive? Did you not know where you were going?"
"He said, 'Go straight. Turn left here. Turn right here,'" the driver muttered.
"I did not know where we were going." Obviously, Mr. Patel was not expecting this reply. "Did Minister Zabiwe not order you to drive to Tuti Mission?"
"Objection, your lordship."
"Do not lead the witness, Mr. Patel." Mr. Joseph Patel was clearly thinking on his feet. He shuffled his papers, glanced at Tongata Zabiwe, who sat completely impassive, and then switched his line of questioning.
"Since the night of the arrest, where have you been?"
"In prison."
"Did you have any visitors?"
"My wife came."
"No others?"
"No."
The chauffeur ducked his head defensively.
"What are those marks on your head?
Were you beaten?" For the first time, Craig noticed the dark lumps on the chauffeur's shaven pate.
"Your lordship, I object most strenuously," Abel Corry cried plaintively. "Mr. Petal, what is the purpose of this line of questioning?"
Mr. Justice Domashawa demanded ominously.
"My lord, I am trying to find why the witness's evidence conflicts with his previous statement to the police."
Mr. Patel struggled to obtain a clear reply from the sulky and uncooperative witness, and finally gave up with a gesture of resignation. "No further questions, your lordship," and Abel Corry rose smiling to cross-examine.
"So, the truck flashed its lights at you?"
"Yes."
"And what happened then?"
"I do not understand."
"Did anybody in the Mercedes say or do anything when you saw the truck?"
"My lord," Mr. Patel began,
"I think that is a fair question. The witness will answer."
The chauffeur frowned with the effort of recall, and then mumbled,
"Comrade Minister Zabiwe said, 'There it is, pull over and stop.'"
"There it is," Abel Corry repeated slowly and clearly,
"pull over and stop. That is what the accused said when he saw the truck. Is that correct?"
"Yes, he said it."
"No further questions, your lordship."
"Call Sarah Tandiwe Nyoni."
Mr. Joseph Patel introduced his surprise witness, and Abel Corry frowned and conferred agitatedly with his two assistant prosecutors. One of them rose, bowed to the bench, and hurriedly left the court. Sarah Tandiwe Nyoni entered the witness stand and took the oath in perfect English. Her voice was melodious and sweet, her manner as reserved and shy as the day that Craig and Sally Ann had first met her at Tuti Mission. She wore a lime-green cotton dress with a white collar and simple low-heeled white shoes. Her hair was elaborately braided in traditional style, and the moment she finished reading the oath, she turned her soft gaze onto Tongata Zabiwe in the dock. He neither smiled nor altered his expression, but his right hand, resting on the railing of the dock, moved slightly, and Craig realized that he was using the secret sign language to the girl. "Courage," said that signal. "I am with you." And the girl took visible strength and confidence from it. She lifted her chin and faced Mr. Patel squarely.
"Please state your name."
"I am Sarah Tandiwe Nyoni," she replied.
Tandiwe Nyoni. Her Matabele name meant beloved bird, and Craig translated softly to Sally Ann.
"It suits her perfectly," she whispered back.
"What is your profession?"
"I am the headmistress of Tuti State Primary School."
"Will you tell the court your qualifications?" Joseph Patel established swiftly that she was an educated and responsible young woman. Then he went on. "Do you know the accused, Tongata Zabiwe?" She looked at Tongata again before answering, and her face seemed to glow.
"I do. Oh, yes, I do," she whispered huskily.
"Please speak up, my dear."
"I know him."
"Did he ever visit you at Tuti Mission Station?"
"Yes,"
she nodded.
How often?
The comrade minister is an important and busy man. I am a schoolteacher. Tungata made a small gesture of denial with his right hand. She saw it, and a little smile formed on her perfectly sculptured lips.
He came as often as he could, but not as often as I would have wished.
Were you expecting him on the night in question?
I was.
Why? We had spoken together on the telephone the previous morning. He promised me he would come. He said he would drive up and arrive before midnight.
The smile faded from her lips, and her eyes grew dark and desolate. I waited until daylight, but he did not come.
As far as you know, was there any particular reason that he was going to visit you that weekend?
Yes, Sarah's cheeks darkened, and Sally Ann was fascinated. She had never seen a black girl blush before.
Yes. He said he wished to speak to my father. I had arranged the meeting.
Thank you, my dear, said Joseph Petal gently.
During Mr. Petal's examination, the prosecutor's assistant had slipped back into his seat and handed Abel Corrie a handwritten sheet of notes. Abel Corrie was holding these in his hand as he rose to cross-examine.
Miss Inyoni, can you tell the court the meaning of the Sindebele word Isifebi?
Tungata Zabiwe growled softly and began to rise, but the police guard laid a hand on his shoulder to restrain him.
It means a harlot,
Sarah answered quietly.
Does it not also mean an unmarried woman who lives with a man?
My lord, Joseph Petal's plea was belated but outraged, and Mr. Justice Domashawa sustained it.
Miss Nyoni, Abel Corrie tried again, do you love the accused? Please speak up, we cannot hear you.
This time Sarah's voice was firm, almost defiant.
I do. Would you do anything for him?
I would.
Would you lie to save him?
I object, your lordship, Joseph Petal leapt to his feet.
And I withdraw the question, Abel Corrie forestalled the judge's intervention.
Let me rather put it to you, Miss Inyoni, that the accused had asked you to provide a warehouse at your school where illegal ivory and leopard skins could be stored.
No,
Sarah shook her head.
He never would. And that he had asked you to supervise the loading of those tusks into a truck and the dispatch of the truck.
No, no,
she cried.
When you spoke to him on the telephone, did he not order you to prepare a shipment of... No, he is a good man,
Sarah sobbed.
A great and good man. He would never have done that.
No further questions, your lordship.
Looking very pleased with himself, Abel Corrie sat down, and his assistant leaned over to whisper his congratulations.